Who is Charlie?
There's a fictional character out there that lived the most interesting life ever lived on a movie screen. When I saw that movie, I said, I want that life. I'm 37 years old. I've almost lived the same exact life.
What if getting fired was the best thing that ever happened to you? Charlie built his voice around the moments most people hide: rejection, doubt, uncertainty, and the pressure to prove yourself when everything feels against you.
If we just made a list of every bad thing that happened, we would have proof that bad things aren't really that bad. We just label them as bad. A situation is a situation. How quickly we label it as good determines our happiness. I'm expecting blessings. I'm a delusional optimist because it's a fun way of living.
He doesn't glorify success. He breaks it down through raw conversations and sharp, thought-provoking takes. Charlie challenges how we think about failure, ambition, and what it really takes to win.
Everything is good when you're counting the wins. Everything is possible when you feel like you're winning. Brain is an amazing tool, but only if it's working for the heart. The brain going rogue and trying to think of everything that can go wrong, trying to be smart. Start your winning streak today. Stop looking at the losses. The losses are there. The wins are there also.
You have one of the most interesting stories because there's so many different seasons to your life. So the hook will be, who is Charlie?
There's a fictional character out there that lived the most interesting life ever lived on a movie screen. And everything he did, whether it was like be a football player or a ping pong player or run across America or a businessman, he was the best in the world at it, and everybody always like overlooked him, but he lived the most interesting life ever lived. And when I saw that movie, I said, I want that life, but I want to be the non-fictional version of it. And so I'm 37 years old, and in my 37 years, I've almost lived the same exact life as Forrest Gump. And I take a lot of pride in, if I want to do something else, I'm just going to leave what I'm doing. Like, remember when Forrest Gump was running across America and he just stopped? And they even asked him, like, why he was running. They wanted, like, some, like, amazing reason. He was just like, I like running. And then he wanted to have a shrimp company. It was like a $1 billion company. He wanted to play ping pong. He just fell in love with each thing he did. He became the best in the world at it. And I wanted to live a life like that. So instead of having, like, one chapter of my book be, you know, 1,000 pages long, my chapters are about 20 pages long. And then there's another chapter that's going to start. And I'm going to start another chapter after that. And I just try to be the best in the world at each thing I do, whether it's, you know, being a music manager or an Iron Man or a keynote speaker or a philanthropist or owning a coconut water company or biking across America and becoming a Nike athlete. It doesn't matter. Like, I just want to live the most interesting life ever lived.
Okay, so you've been fired more times than most people have jobs. You've been ghosted at airports. You've had food spit on when you were hungry and starving. You went from managing two chains. You lost over 130 pounds. You became a Nike athlete. But everything that's happened, because when people look at you, if I just read them all the good things and all the things you've been successful at, they'd be like, oh, that's a highlight reel. But I think now, even knowing you for a few minutes, I actually think you place more value in the times in your life when things didn't go so well. Yeah. I think that those things are probably the, and it's always how you look at the negative that eventually leads to the positive. And something that you do exceptionally well is you just default to glass half full all the time. And I guess the question is, where does that mindset, personality, delusion, where does it come from?
My mindset does not go automatically to glass half full. When something bad happens, I'm very emotional. I go pretty dark. I get frustrated. I punch a pillow. I punch a steering wheel. I get mad. I think of the worst. And then something happens where I say, this is not fun. And I have one actual goal in life. I want to have fun. And negative, bad, frustrated, angry, that's not fun. And so I'm able to get out of that quickly. And so my advice would be to anybody, it's all right to be human, like throw the temper tantrum, get frustrated. I do it. But then I want to have fun. So I find a gift in it. I'll go to the darkest moment. I'll just like brain tumor. Okay. Get diagnosed with brain tumor. Like
that's as dark as it's gonna
get. I get scared. I get everything you can imagine. Cry, fearful, call my mom, tell her come out to California because I don't even know if I'm going to live. I'm not even telling her. I'm just like, I just need to spend time with my mom. I'm scared. But then something happens. I close my eyes and I saw this like movie screen of my life. And I saw my life as a movie. And I was trying to determine if it's a good movie or a bad movie. And I was like, here's a kid. He buries a dream. He does something realistic, like start a business instead of chasing his dream. He goes to make a ton of money. And then he dies. Good movie, bad movie, bad movie.
Most people's lives, though.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. That's like, to me, Rotten Tomato score, 18. Like, bad. Like, and so I said, what would be a good movie? Good movie would be, okay, let's walk through this. This is like framework for anybody watching. Little life hack. Write a script of the good movie and then let's go try to live that. All right. I close my eyes. I see a movie screen and I'm playing out my life. It was a kid, good kid, had a dream. Wasn't realistic to be an athlete. He was short, fat. He buried the dream. He goes on to do something realistic, like, okay, you could be a good businessman. So he starts a business, becomes very successful, and at the height of his career, he gets diagnosed with a brain tumor. Okay. What would make this a good story? What if he did, like, a big, like, reversal, and he went back to his childhood dream? And then he like chased his dream of being an athlete. Okay, that would be a good story. Okay, let's add to that. Okay, he's an athlete. Okay, he does an Ironman. Okay, he reverses his brain tumor. Okay, story's getting better. Oh, he becomes a Nike athlete, like his favorite company. He's in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. Yeah, okay, now this movie is getting freaking good. Okay, he's in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams, and he's on TV as an athlete, and he's on the cover of like fitness magazines. Like, yeah, he left his business. He gave it all away, and he went to chase his dream. Okay, this is a good movie. And then all his dreams come true. And then he dedicates his life to making kids with cancer's dreams come true. And he sells all of his houses. He moves into a bus and he helps kids with cancer. Okay, the movie is freaking good. That's the movie. Thank you for the brain tumor. For making the movie good. Because the movie would suck if he didn't have the brain tumor. So now I'm grateful for it. Because it gave me a path to have the most interesting, best, inspirational life. If I'm going to live a life, might as well live the most interesting life. This isn't my practice life. This is my only one. So thank you to the brain tumor. I get to have a good movie the second I get there. That's a lot different place than being scared, frustrated. That's not fun. What I just did was fun. And that's my goal. Let's have fun.
What made you able to think like that? Because I don't think, I'm going to make a gross generalization. I hope it's not unfair. I don't think that most people think that way. God forbid somebody has an event like this happen in their life. Maybe then that's what gives them the courage. But the majority of people, hopefully, will never have to think or have to deal with that. But how do you think like that? How do you think like that without this rock bottom moment? I love getting into people's minds because like you put two people in the exact same situation and like one depressed, fearful, scared, life is over. The other person, you're the other person.
And I don't want to come off as like a unicorn of any sorts. I think I have had practice of a lot of bad things happening. And if all of us were to write down a list of each and every bad thing that's happened to you, and you could see proof, and you probably got proof that it was good. That girlfriend that might have cheated on you, or that boyfriend that might have cheated on you, you know what? Thank God. Because we needed to get away from them. Imagine being married to that person. Like, no, like my life is better without you. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, oh, the job that fired me. Like, I started making more money afterwards. Like, thank you for the firing. Or, man, what's other bad things that happen? Like, I mean, if we just made a list of every bad thing that happened, we would have proof that bad things aren't really that bad. We just label them as bad. A situation is a situation. How quickly we label it as good determines our happiness. You will see some person take a bad situation and it will replay in their mind for life. Is that fun or not fun? Not fun. So you're making a choice to not have fun. I'm making a choice to have fun. The second I find the good is the second I start having fun. And the second I start having fun is the second I smile. And then the second I smile is the second people want to be around me and I attract blessings. I want to detract people from blessing me. I will be sad and angry. I want to attract. So fun, I want to have fun. Let me find the good and the bad because I have proof that every bad thing that's happened in my life has turned into a blessing, and then more blessings just follow after that. And that's a really fun way.
Priori is a success story partner. Now, how many times have you set a goal, you've been fired up for a week, and then you've completely fallen off? That's not a discipline problem. It's a systems problem. That's why I use Priori. It is a goal setting and habit tracking app built on neuroscience, backed by Harvard research and inspired by Atomic Habits. You set your priorities and Priori breaks them into small daily steps built right into your schedule. So instead of feeling overwhelmed, you just follow the plan. It gamifies everything, streaks, check-ins, small wins that build momentum, and 78% of users succeed after years of failing at the same goal. Over 12,000 people use it. They have a 4.7 star rating. It's free to download. Check it out at priori.life or search Priori in the App Store or Google Play. That's priori.life.
Living life.
You speak a lot about being realistic and maybe not being realistic. Yeah. But I'll tell you something. So when you said what you just said about like keeping track of all the things that happen in your life. So I've actually said something similar but different. And I'll explain why I think this idea is so important. But I love the way that you look at tracking stuff and realizing that the bad isn't always as bad as you think it is in hindsight. I've always said that people play it too safe and are too realistic because they can only remember the bad. And if they keep track of all the shit that happens in their life, they'll actually realize that a lot more good happens than bad. Like when they take more risk, it works out more often than not. Yeah. And they win every single day. Yeah. And I think that if more people, I think that we are biologically wired to remember the bad. That's why news companies work the way they do. That's
what they have.
We're human. But like if we, like I've told people this before, like look at, if you want to take a career move, if you want to date somebody and you think that person's out of your league or you're scared to make a, you know, you're scared to send a DM or like say hi. If you want to lose weight, but you're like, oh my God, I'm so far gone. And all these people at the gym are so good looking and so in shape. And you're like, I can't do that. I can't build a business. I can't be an entrepreneur. That's not for me. That's for someone else. I want to be realistic. Look at all the times you've won in your life. Why would this not work out? Statistically, why would this not work out? Every single day, I mean, this is very much your thing too, where every single thing that happens is a win. But look at how many times you've been successful at risks in your life.
It's almost guaranteed.
And it's almost guaranteed it's going to work out. This is why I'm a big fan of like setting long-term objectives. Because if you want to have a happy marriage, you want to build a successful business, if you want to lose weight and achieve whatever, you know, look, or if you just want to be healthier, if you just do it for an unreasonable amount of time, you'll find a way to be successful at it. That's really it. It's almost impossible to not be. Anyway, so this is why I love the way you talk about realistic, because realistic, I think, is fake.
Yeah.
Realistic is a perception of what our limitations are.
Yeah.
But it's actually wrong. It's completely incorrect.
Correct.
What made you hate being realistic so much? What was the thing in your life that made, like, okay, so sit, you have this brain tumor. Yeah. And this list of shit that you want to accomplish, at this point you are, I think, over 300 pounds,
yes.
Correct? And you're telling people you're going to be working with Nike, you're going to be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. And like, is this the same, this is the thing that made you not realistic? This is the thing that made you realize that realistic is just a scam. I don't know how else to say it.
Is this water bottle real?
I'd say yeah.
Okay, why is it real?
Because I can touch it. No, I can't touch it. I can see it.
You can see it.
I can see it.
So once you see it, you...
I believe it's real.
Close your eyes. If you wanted to imagine something, can you see it?
Mm-hmm.
You can see it.
100%.
You don't need your eyes open to see. The second I close my eyes, whether I'm Charlie Rocket, or I'm Walt Disney, or I'm Elon Musk, or I'm Thomas Edison. Once I can see it, I believe it's real. And that's not unique to me. That's unique to the greatest people in history. So this isn't rare, because there's somebody who saw a business idea. Once they see it, it's already done. Time hasn't caught up yet. I saw a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams in my mind with me in it. And if I speak it out loud to my friends, they think it's a little crazy. That's okay. I saw it. And there's a reason why when I jumped into this, I took a leap of faith. That's really crazy. Leaving a $15 million a year business to chase a dream that nobody else could see. And I always like live in this mentality of just like, thank me later. Like it's all good. And being a delusional optimist, I believe everything's actually going to be easy versus hard. There's a few things I disagree with like popular culture. Especially like in the motivation space, I really dislike when an educator or a motivator tells people it's going to be hard. You're going to have to grind. You're going to have to. I don't like that. I don't want anything in my life to be hard. I don't want to go to calculus 3 class. That's hard. When I go into a dream, I actually do the opposite. I don't say it's going to be hard. I say it's going to be easy. What? What do you mean it's going to be easy? Nobody says anything's going to be easy. This life, this universe, is like a restaurant. If I order something off the menu, I'm going to get it. If I order hard, what do they call the smart people? They say confirmation bias. That's what a smart person would say. Confirmation bias. You are going to spend your life confirming what you believe. I believe this thing I'm going to do is hard. I'm the opposite. I'm writing a book. We just had a conversation. You said every person you've talked to says a book is hard. The hardest thing they've ever done. Running a $900 million business might be easier than writing a book. And I was sitting here thinking like, I think it's going to be easy. Why? Well, I'm going to go on a bunch of podcasts and I'm going to practice telling my stories and I'm going to see which ones resonate the most with people. And when I edit all the little clips, I'll see the ones that have the most amount of views. So I know which stories people really like. And then I'll build it out. And then when I go and do my research, I'm like, wow, like the guy who wrote The Alchemist wrote it in 6 days. Like it might not be that hard. Oh, the guy who wrote Forrest Gump wrote the book in 6 weeks. What if it's not hard?
Is that true?
Swear to God. Swear to God. What if it's not hard? What if it is easy? What if I'm in a flow state? What if this is meant for me? What if I'm going to sit down, tell the best stories in the freaking world, and let it just flow, and then I find an editor, because I was talking on a podcast, and then an editor reaches out to me and is like, Charlie, I'm so inspired from you. I want to edit your book. And I'm like, holy shit, you believe in my vision? Wow, I just went on a podcast and the editor reached out. Now I got an editor. And then it's like, oh, but I can go down a path of thinking it's hard. Oh, I don't know how to write a book. I've never written a book. Maybe I need a publisher. Oh, like some publishers have turned me down before. Like if my brain goes into this is hard, I'm going to actually start looking for ways it's hard. But I'm looking for ways it's easy. So I found two authors who wrote two of the greatest books of all time that wrote one in 6 days and one in 6 weeks. Okay, maybe this is easy. But guess what me thinking is going to be easy is actually going to do? Now, this is the secret on how I've achieved every dream in my life. If I say this big, bold, scary dream of mine is going to be easy, I'm actually going to show up.
That's the hack. That's the secret. That's the...
And I am delusional enough to believe each and every day. You know what another thing is? I got another thing I have a problem with. It's very popular culture, especially on the internet, for somebody to say this quote that I highly disagree with. Nobody's coming to save you. Why would you say that? What? I think every day somebody's coming to save me, but I'm smart enough to know why they're going to come and save me. Let's say your car broke down on the side of the road. You're just waving, trying to get people to pull over. And they're just driving right past you because you're just waving. You're asking for a handout. Please help me. Help me. Help me. Help me. You know what would happen if you just got out of your car and started pushing that bad boy? Do you know how many people would be inspired and they would pull over, and then two people are pushing the car with you? And then more people are inspired and they're like, I want to be a part of this movement. Like these guys are pushing a car down the side of the highway. I want to be like that. I want to be like those guys. I'm joining the movement. And now you got five people pushing the car and then more pulling over, and you got more people than you need. I expect in my life, somebody's coming to save me. But I'm not waving my hand saying, come and save me. I'm pushing the car. And I know people are coming to save me. So the words will never come out of my mouth. Nobody's coming to save me. No, I'm expecting blessings. I'm a delusional optimist. I am expecting a blessing to fall out of the freaking sky every day I wake up. But why? Because it's a fun way of living. It's just more fun. This is everything. I don't know how to articulate it in a sophisticated way.
No.
It is just fun to wake up and dream delusionally. Like there is magic and fairy dust in the freaking air today. It's just more fun than being negative and realistic. And I just want to have fun.
I think that when people default to the negative, all these opportunities still come their way, but they just don't see them.
There's two things that are very addictive. One is like a let's call it like a, okay, you're driving down the street, okay? You're on the PCH. It's beautiful, right? And on the right side of the street is a house that's on fire. And on the left side of the street is a beautiful sunset. Which one are you looking at?
The house on fire.
You can't not look, right?
It's going to be like you want to look at the sunset, but you're like, oh my God, this is a fucking mess. What's going on?
You know, human nature. Yeah. We are designed. It takes the most insane willpower ever not to look at the house on fire and wonder like what's going on over there. There's ambulances and firemen and you're wondering if everybody's
okay. You
want
to know how real this is? Even when there's an accident on the highway and the cars aren't blocking traffic, there will still be traffic because people are slowing down to look.
That's human nature. So that is the same exact thing that goes on in our lives. There is something so beautiful And we can all agree, hands down, sitting there watching a sunset is one of the most therapeutic, most enjoyable things in life. But one of the most addicting things is looking at the bad. And if there was somebody who was strong enough to actually look at the sunset, that person is transcended. And I actually have a hack in life on how I look at the sunset and withstand the willpower to get addicted to the negative. Because there's always good happening, guaranteed, and there's always bad. What are we looking at? My brain can only think about one thing at a time. Right now, if I were to tell you beige hat, boom, your brain's thinking about beige hat. Like, I just controlled your mind. You did not think about a pink elephant. Oh, now you're thinking about a pink elephant. You can only think about one thing at a time. So if there is a lot of bad going on in my life and there's a lot of good going on in my life, I have a hack. It's called I'm on a winning streak. It's a game I play and I start it every morning. I get my cup of coffee and I start my winning streak. And I'm trying to see how far I can go. But I start adding up the wins. Now, here we go. Cup of coffee. This is about to make me feel good. You know, like, okay, my day started. I'm on a winning streak, right? That was a lot of happiness for $3. That's a win. Some people need to like spend like $10,000 on a vacation to be happy. Like this cup of happiness, winning streak. Then I caught the green light, winning streak. But I'm riding there with my girlfriend and we caught the red light. It's also a winning streak because I tell my girlfriend, I just got more time with you. Winning streak. And then go to the grocery store. There's a good parking spot. Winning streak. There's not a good parking spot. Get more steps in. Winning streak. Now I'm at like 7 wins. Okay. Now I'm addicted to counting more wins. So now my reticular activating system is trained to find good things even in bad situations. If I got in a car wreck, well, there was a person who got in a car wreck before September 11th. They were headed into the World Trade Center. Okay, this is a good thing. Maybe it's protecting me from something else. There's two frequencies. There's paranoia and there's pronoia. The universe is conspiring against me as paranoia. Pronoia is the universe is conspiring for me. Everything is happening for me when you're on a winning streak. I didn't get the good parking spot. I'm on a winning streak. I'm getting more steps in. Like everything is good when you're counting the wins. And then you get so addicted to being on a winning streak. Then all the blessings start flowing your way. You become magnetic. Now all these opportunities are flowing your way. You talk different. You feel different. You feel like a winner. Now you've got all this momentum in life. Now your decision making is different. Now your wife loves you differently. Everybody is just loving a winner. People don't like a loser. We don't even like ourselves as losers. And yet looking at that house as burning is so addictive. And if we look at all the things that are burning in our lives, we are going to have proof that we are losing. But if we just look at all the wins, we will have proof that we are winners. And everything is possible when you feel like you're winning. Toronto, let's say y'all are on a 22-game winning streak.
Blue Jays are doing good now.
You see what I'm saying? Let's say y'all won 22 games in a row. What are you thinking about?
The next game we're going to win.
You have to.
Yeah.
23. Why not? You have proof y'all can keep winning. You're at 22. Now you can only think about 23. 23. When you're at 23, now you're thinking about?
24.
We got to find 24. So when you're at your 23rd win for the day, you're like, okay, I'm looking for the next one. The wins were always there. We just have to look at them to feel like a winner. So it's very simple. But once again, sounds so unsophisticated. It's just fucking fun.
Quick question. What's your go-to when you got 10 minutes before a meeting or a workout? For me, it just used to be whatever I could grab, which usually meant skipping meals entirely or just grabbing something that left me crashing an hour later because it was just full of garbage. That's why I'm partnering with Huel. This Black Edition ready to drink is a complete meal. So it has 35 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, 35 essential vitamins and minerals. It is no sugar added, gluten-free, under $5. I always keep a few of these in my fridge. And honestly, it solved the whole back-to-back meetings, go, 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 nonstop, no time to eat problem super well. And this one's new for me. It's Huel's Daily Greens. I had the blueberry this morning. Honestly, first impression, it was way better than I expected. It's developed by registered nutritionists and dietitians. There are 42 vitamins, minerals, and superfoods, only 25 calories, 4 grams of fiber, and just 1 gram of sugar. I throw one back first thing before my morning calls every single morning. Look, if you're running a business, time is the most valuable asset. Huel makes healthy eating simple, and they also just launched into Target stores nationwide, so you can get it everywhere. Try both products today with 15% off your purchase for new customers with my exclusive code Scott at Huel.com/Scott. Try both products today with 15% off your purchase for new customers with my exclusive code Scott. S-C-O-T-T at Huel.com/Scott. Use my code, fill out the post-checkout survey to help support the show. That is Huel.com/Scott. They really make healthy living taste amazing. Even if you're on the go, healthy eating, healthy lifestyle doesn't have to taste bad. It doesn't have to suck. NetSuite is a success story partner. Now, every business owner I talk to is asking the exact same question. How do we make AI work for us? The possibilities are endless. Guessing is a little bit too risky, but sitting on the sidelines isn't an option either because your competitors are already making their move. The answer is NetSuite by Oracle. You can put AI to work today. NetSuite is the number one AI cloud ERP. It's trusted by over 43,000 businesses. It brings your financials, your inventory, your commerce, your HR, and CRM into a single source of truth. And that connected data is what makes your AI smarter. It automates routine tasks, delivers actionable insights, helps you cut costs and make confident decisions, and you've got total flexibility. And with the NetSuite AI connector, you can use the AI of your choice, connect it to your actual business data, and automate all those manual processes. This isn't a bolted-on tool. It's AI built into the systems that run your business. So whether you're doing millions or hundreds of millions, NetSuite keeps you ahead. And if I needed this product, this is what I'd use. Now, if your revenues are at least in the 7 figures, get the free business guide, Demystifying AI, at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. The guide is free to you at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. You've had a lot of crazy shit come true for you.
Yes, sir.
What is the craziest thing that has ever happened? I know a couple of your stories. I guess pick one.
I walk away from a $15 million a year business. And I told everybody in my life, my mom, my business partners, my artists. I managed at the time, I managed 2 Chainz, Travis Porter, Young Dolph. And I told them I'm going to leave everything. And they said, what are you going to do? I'm going to be a Nike athlete. And at the time, I'm 300 pounds. So everybody respected my decision. I don't know if they understood my vision, but they respected it, that I was sick with a brain tumor and I wanted to accomplish a dream. And so I wanted to make a fan-made Nike commercial. Because when I close my eyes, I see that I'm going to be a Nike athlete. I know it's done, but I have to find a way to get Nike's attention. Because if I emailed them, like, that's not going to do anything. That's too realistic. I need to do something unrealistic. Because I actually believed it was going to be easy. I told everybody what was going to happen. I told people, I said, look, I'm going to make a fan-made Nike commercial. Nike's going to see it. Nike's going to sign me, and I'm going to be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. You can imagine people's opinions internally, but I would actually write it in my notebook every day as well. So I needed to find a videographer that I could afford that can make a Nike commercial.
This is not a cheap videographer.
No. Like, I'm actually trying to make an actual Nike commercial, which on the low end would be like a couple hundred grand to make what I'm trying to make, because I need to have like the Hans Zimmer type strings. I need it to look a certain way. I need it produced a certain way. I need it to be absolutely genius filmmaking in order to get Nike's attention. So I'm telling filmmakers what I'm looking for. And they say, Charlie, like, what's your budget? And I'm like, a few grand. Like, you know, like, I'm posting on Instagram to my, like, 10,000 followers. Like, I'm not spending $200,000. Like, I'm not that rich. And they're like, Charlie, you need to be realistic. You say you want this, but you're only willing to pay this. I said, don't tell me to be realistic. I know there's somebody out here that can do this. They're like, Charlie, people who make film don't make Hans Zimmer type music. There's two different people. And the person who shoots doesn't edit. The person who does the lighting doesn't do the scoring. And the person who color grades doesn't shoot. And the person who owns the equipment doesn't do any of that stuff. You need like a 15-person team to pull this off. And it's going to be a multi-day shoot. And it's going to take weeks and weeks and weeks post-edit. I got told to be realistic about four times by four different people, and I got pissed off because I'm at Gracias Madre's restaurant on Melrose. It's a nice vegan restaurant. And I took this TV producer out to dinner, and to my face, he said, Charlie, you need to be realistic. I pulled my friend out of the restaurant, and I talked to him outside, and I said, nothing I've done my entire life has ever been realistic. Why do people keep telling me to be realistic? I know that this is going to happen. I'm going to find my videographer who's going to do this, and I'm going to find him tomorrow, to where I'm like using my frustration, and I'm actually pretty toxic, but in the most non-toxic way, because I'm actually speaking something that's going to happen. It's actually like,
you're like
my
funneling anger.
Funneling anger in a way that I'm speaking exactly what's going on. It's almost motivating me to say, this is what's going to happen. So I'm almost becoming more confident through my anger. So I'm actually grateful for each person who's like telling me to be realistic. Next morning, I wake up. I'm in Santa Monica, California. I'm on my couch, and I'm writing in my quantum possibilities notebook delusionally. Today is the day I found my videographer slash editor. It's done! Exclamation mark. It's easy! Exclamation mark. My roommate walks in the front door, and behind him is a videographer with this huge, like, movie setup camera rig with all this stuff hanging off of it. And I asked my roommate, why do you have a cameraman behind you? He's not in the entertainment industry. He's a business development for like a goji berry company. Why is there a videographer behind you? He said, my friend Manny called me and wanted to shoot something for his Airbnb business. So he sent this guy over. And I'm thinking to myself, this is my magical moment. This is it. I just wrote in my notebook. I knew it was going to happen. And here's this guy who walks in the front door. So I look at him. And then, like, he was kind of gothic looking, so like my excitement dropped a little bit. He was wearing like all black, had like he looked like he was in Fall Out Boy or something. And I said, "Do you do videos?" He said, "Yeah, I do videos, but nobody ever pays me." He was like a dark cloud. I was like, "Oh, there goes my magical moment." I was like, "What do you mean nobody ever pays you?" He's like, "I'm only doing this shoot because like there was a Lamborghini at the other one and I wanted to just have that a part of my portfolio." I'm like, "This guy sounds like a dark cloud." Okay. I was like, "Can I see some of your work?" I've lost hope at this point. He said, "Yeah, I haven't updated my website in like 7 years." I'm like, "Oh God." I was like, "All right, what's your website?" I opened up the little thing and I'm just like, "Da da da." And there was a little short film on there and I clicked on it and I'm looking at it. "You shot this?"
"Yeah, I shot it."
I said, "Who owned all the equipment?"
"Well, like, I'm kind of like a hoarder, so anytime I make money, like, I just, like, you know, buy stuff. I have lighting, I have dolly cams, I have Steadicam rigs, I have sound equipment, I have this, I have anamorphic lenses, I have that." I'm like, "Hold on. All this equipment you owned?" "Yeah."
I said, "Who did the scoring? Because a film is only about the music. There's a reason why films pay Hans Zimmer $10 million to play the music. Like Interstellar. It's all about the music. That's what makes a film a film." I said, "Who did the music on this?"
"Well, I used to be in a rock band, and we were on the Warped Tour, and we had a record deal, but the record label dropped us. I said, hold on. You made all the music.
Yeah.
You made all the music.
Yeah.
I said, who did the scoring?
He said, I did everything.
I said, who mixed and mastered the audio?
I have a studio in my bedroom.
I said, who did the color grading?
Well, I taught myself Da Vinci.
I said, you did everything? I'm thinking back to my conversation the night before. He told me to be realistic, and the guy, he walked in my front door. I told him, I said, look at my notebook. I said, I was going to find you today.
He said, what do you mean find me today?
I said, listen, you and I, we're going to make a fan-made Nike commercial. Nike's going to see it, and Nike's going to want to sign me, and I'm being a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. He said, dude, you're crazy. I said, I know, but it's my dream. I said, how much would it cost to make a commercial? We sat down, we started storyboarding, and he said, $660. We made a fan-made Nike commercial. I uploaded it to my Instagram. 3 days later, my phone rings. Caller ID says, Beaverton, Oregon. Nike flies me to campus. Everybody who thought I was crazy is starting to believe a little bit. They walk me into a conference room with 30 of the biggest executives. And the executive sat me down. And they said, we're changing the direction of our company because of this film you made. What happened after that was pure magic. Nike created what became the biggest Nike commercial of all time. The commercial was the Colin Kaepernick commercial. It was named after me. It's called Dream Crazy. I made a second family Nike commercial called Dream Crazy, and they named that commercial after my commercial. And I was in a commercial with LeBron James, Serena Williams. It was a Super Bowl commercial. Stock price went up $8 billion. I was on the cover of Runner's World magazine, and I got to live the 3D version of what I saw when I closed my eyes. And if that's not magic, I don't know what is. But you know how that internet motivator said nobody's coming to save you? They're goddamn wrong. There was a lot of people that came to save me. I had a dream. I was just crazy enough to chase it. And the universe conspired to make my dream come true, because I woke up every day and I actually was crazy enough to believe that my dream was real. Dreams are real. It's not our imagination. We see it for a reason. We didn't choose our dreams. Our dreams were already in us. I did not choose this. I closed my eyes and I saw something. It was already done. Time wasn't caught up yet. I just had to be crazy enough to go do it. No matter what anybody said, no matter if anybody told me I need to be realistic, I did not ever know if it would ever work, but I was just crazy enough. I was delusional enough to believe it was mine the entire time.
Whenever you ask for something from the universe, there's going to be a gap between when you ask for it and when you receive it. I think that's where a lot of people fail and a lot of people give up. Yeah. It's that gap. It's the gap. It's the, I want to have this commercial and I'm going to believe in it. I'm going to write about it. I'm also going to live the things that are going to get me it until I get it. It's the entrepreneur that wants to start a company and they want it and then they believe in it for 10 years and then they receive the successful company. Mm-hmm. What's your advice for somebody to keep on going on in that gap?
Well, I actually have a life hack on how to close the gap.
Am I too pessimistic when I say you just got to stick in the game for, like, that's my thought. I've always said that. You just got to stay in the game long enough for it to come true.
Well, that's true. 1 + 1 = 2 is math. 1 + 1 = 1,000 is math too. Both are right. There are people who receive miracles, and there are people who receive math. 1 + 1 = 2. I do both. Remember, I'm going to push the car and everybody's going to come help. Both are necessary. I don't sit on a couch and manifest and think like something's going to fall out of the sky without me doing some work too. But I do have a life hack on how to speed up blessings. And this isn't some like manifestation shit. I believe bigger is easier.
I believe bigger is easier. I believe doing a cannonball will bring back the wave of energy that I need. For example, there's a pool. I need blessings to come to me, right? I need blessings to come to me. That is the goal. Like if you run a business, you need blessings to come to you, right? That's the goal. Blessings come to me. I need to do something to send something out, and then I need blessings to come back to me, right? It might be an ad on Facebook. I'm going to send it out, and what do I want to come back? A customer, money. It's the same thing with energy, a Facebook ad, a business, a marketing plan, or a dream. It's all the same thing. If there's a pool, and I dipped my pinky toe in, it'll send the smallest little ripple out. Will it hit the other side of the pool and bounce back? Probably not. But if I were to cannonball, it'll send out a wave. And what comes back?
Ripples. Waves.
Lots of them.
Everything. Waves. Yeah.
It's coming back. Bigger is easier. It took the same amount of time to put my pinky toe in as it did to cannonball. I learned this in the music industry. I'm broke. I'm living in my mom's basement, and it is my job to make my artist dreams come true. I don't have any money, and it takes a lot of money to take a record to radio. Usually, you need a marketing budget of about $70,000 to get like a top 20 record in the country. I don't have that. So I need to make a cannonball. So I need to get to the radio stations, okay? I need to send something out, and I need to receive the blessings. Okay, how do I get my song on radio? Maybe I'll email the radio DJs. Okay, so I email. That's pinky toe. No. We don't need to email. I'm getting in my car. I'm going to a radio station. Actually, no. I need a bigger cannonball. I'm going to every radio station. From Jackson, Mississippi to Washington, D.C. Okay, that's big. I get in my car. I'm driving. My business partners call me. They said, Charlie, where are you? I said, I'm going to the radio stations. All of them. They said, do you know the radio stations? No. I'm going to go meet them. They're like, this isn't how it works. You don't just pull up to a radio station. They play. But it's like my only option. I'm cannonballing. Yeah. Emailing to me is too small. So I go to a radio station on the side of a highway in Macon, Georgia. And there's a program director in his office. So I'm knocking on the door. You can see in the window his office. Knocking on the door. And then I look over into the window. And then I like knock on the window and I'm like waving at him. I'm a 20-year-old kid. I talk to him and I was like, I got this group. He said, kid, that's not how it works. He said, y'all have a record deal? No. I was like, I know that y'all make money from advertisement and y'all need the best songs. I show him a video of like my group performing at a skating rink. This is what the kids like. All the kids going crazy. Like thousands of kids screaming the songs. I said, this is the future. This is the new hottest group in the world. He said, Charlie, it's just not how it works. He said, you gotta get on the mix show first. Like you don't just go into rotation. Like it has to start with the mix show DJs. I said, mix show DJs? What do you mean? He said, well, we got like 6 mix show DJs. They like can play newer music. So I'm like, okay. I reach out to every mix show DJ and I invite them out to Hooters for a lunch. And this is in Macon, Georgia. Just one radio station. And I got all these hoodies printed up with their names on the back. And it says, salute the DJ on the front. And I show up and I give them a hoodie. I take them out to lunch. I show them our video and they loved it. They started playing the song. So then I drove to the next radio station in Columbus, did the same thing. Then I drove to the next radio station in Montgomery, same thing. Then I went to Jackson, Mississippi. Then I cut all the way across, went to South Carolina, North Carolina. I hit every radio station from Jackson, Mississippi to Washington, D.C. as a cannonball. And guess what? I took 3 records, top 10 in the nation, without spending any marketing budget. I just spent my time cannonballing. I did not email. I did not try to go small. I said, what's the biggest thing I can physically do? And it sped up the blessings. We can speed things up by cannonballing. I truly believe bigger is easier. It takes the same amount of time to be mediocre as it does to be great.
My life, this podcast, has been built by cannonballs.
Really?
Yeah, by just taking audacious risks and just taking shots and just DMing people that were way out of, I say this in air quotes, way out of my league. I had Guy Kawasaki.
Yeah.
In like the first 10 episodes or something like that. Bro, I was shitting myself.
How'd you do it?
I just DM'd him. I said, hey, you want to
go? You went big.
Yeah. But I've gone big for the past 6 years. I've gone big.
It's easier.
It's easier.
You got more results.
Yeah.
There was a wave that bounced back.
100%. So Guy Kawasaki, and you never know what's going on. You can be strategic about cannonballs too. But when I reached out to him, and I reached out to a whole bunch of other like big, big names, and some of them said yes, and it creates the flywheel. It gets things going. And it just so happened when Guy's been on my show twice now. And he came on the first time just because he was starting a podcast around the same time that I was starting a podcast. He's like, well, it makes sense. I just got to go on podcast. This kid just reached out to me. Why not? HubSpot has been a sponsor of this show almost since the beginning. Almost since the beginning. Because when I started the show, they had just started a podcast network and they were sponsoring a whole bunch of podcasts. And I was like, well, you know, the show's doing well, but it's still early days. Let me fill out this Google type form on their website. It wasn't even like an official HubSpot form. It was a Google type form. And somebody got back to me like, we watched your show. We like it. We'll sponsor you. And I've spoken at Inbound, their biggest conference, for now 4 years in a row. I think it's tens of thousands of people go to this thing. So it's just my whole life has changed by taking these audacious shots, these cannonballs. And I've never heard somebody describe it that way, but I just wish more people would take those shots because they're like, people play small all the time.
What's more fun, cannonballing or like dipping your toe in?
Cannonballing.
Let's have fun.
Let's have fun.
You see how I keep going back to that?
Yeah.
I think all my little life hacks are these like epiphany moments that just come from fun is better.
It just sucks playing small.
It really does.
It's so hard. Yeah. It's so hard. Because it is the same energy for less output.
Absolutely. Because it doesn't bounce back.
Because if even like a very like real example just from my world is I could have emailed 100 people that great people, but they don't have the audience or the notoriety like of Guy Kawasaki, of one of Apple's first employees that speaks on stage like 360 days a year and has a great, great following. So it would have taken the same energy to reach out to them. It would have taken the same energy to record. And even if their stories were great, they wouldn't have brought the same amount of attention to my show. And that compounds over the past, 6 years and tons and tons and tons of interviews.
How would you have articulated the realistic way of me becoming a Nike athlete in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams in the biggest Nike commercial of all time if I did not cannonball?
300 pounds and never playing a professional sport, I would have said it's impossible. It's not even like there's a pathway to it in my mind for you from a realistic perspective, because you just named people who were also in that commercial who got there by not just being professional athletes their entire life, by being the 0.01% of their peers.
Being delusional might be the secret to success.
You have a lot of different frameworks that I love. And I love the way you think. And I wish more people would think the way that you think. But you do have a framework for architecting a dream, for being delusionally optimistic, and for actually not just thinking that, but executing against it. And we've like touched on it and danced around it. But like if we were actually going to lay it out, the framework for building a dream, for living beyond what you ever thought possible, for being delusionally optimistic and then achieving success from that. What is the framework if we had to lay it out for someone?
If I were to say a sentence, I want you to complete the sentence. Follow your
dreams.
Follow your
passion.
Follow your
ambition.
Follow your
heart.
Follow your
brain.
It just feels weird, right? Yeah. How weird was that? Follow your heart and follow your dreams are most people's first two answers. Follow your heart. It's an organ. Follow your dreams. We don't say follow your ideas. We don't say follow your knowledge. We don't say follow your brain. We don't say follow your kidney. We just named an organ in our body. And that organ is so closely tied to our dreams. Now, we have two employees here. Both are trying to be the boss. That can be a problem. Your heart, it sees something. It knows something. It wants something. Your brain, I'll break it down like this. Somebody thinks of a dream, something they want. They get really excited. Their heart starts exploding. They feel it. They're like, man, like, let's do that. I want to be rich. I want to be financially secure. There's all this magic. And they're like, I'm going to follow my dreams. And their brain really likes that. And for a short period of time, there's this like massive dopamine rush where your heart and your brain are coherent. And then the brain kicks in. And it's just trying to do its job. Brain's like, okay, it's time to chase our dream. This is where I come in. Let's think of everything that can go wrong. Okay, we have to be smart about this, Scott. Okay, what if this doesn't work? Or what if this goes wrong? What if this fails? Okay, what if it's going to be hard and we need to solve for this and this and this and this? And the more your brain starts thinking, the less your heart has a voice. And your heart shuts down. Your heart went from this glowing, vibrating excitement to now it doesn't even have a light because the brain is thinking about everything that it's going to take to achieve this dream. All the things that can go wrong. All the reality. And there's this place we go. It's called the Valley of Reality. And that's where most all dreams die so quickly because we think this big, bold, scary thing that was once magical 10 minutes ago is now scary. And what if it doesn't work? So we went from this high to high to this valley of reality low. Our heart shuts down and loses its voice because the brain is driving the ship. The brain is very intelligent, but there's a reason why we don't say follow your brain. There's only one organ we follow. It's follow your heart. And you trust your
instincts, gut. Your gut. Yeah.
You don't trust your brain. Who trusts their brain? Not one person is ever going to be like, trust your brain. You trust your gut. You follow your heart. The brain is special. But if the brain is driving, it's going to drive you straight into the valley of reality. Until you get so tired of not having your dream. Your brain will crash and burn in that valley of reality so many times that eventually your brain is going to say, it's going to look down at his heart. It's going to say, maybe we'll try it your way this time. Maybe I'm not the smart one here. Maybe I need to work for you. And when your brain gets in coherence with your heart and it starts working for your heart, maybe it's going to be easy. Maybe somebody is going to come bless us. Maybe everything's going to go right. And maybe if something goes wrong, it's for a good reason. You know what? We can do this. Heart, brain, we can do this. Actually, heart, I'm going to help you make this happen. Everything is happening for us. Oh, look at this win. You were right, heart. This is going to be easy. Oh, let's make this happen. Oh, I have an idea. Let's do this. Let's do this. This is good. Oh, oh, boom. Next thing you know, your dreams are coming true because your brain turned off the reality. And after a while, it said, you know what? It's just time to work for the heart. The heart knows. Brain is an amazing tool, but only if it's working for the heart. The brain going rogue and trying to think of everything that can go wrong, trying to be smart, trying to protect us from all the things, it will paralyze you. And it will make you not ever even show up to the dream. The reason why I have been able to accomplish every dream I've ever thought of is because quickly I can get my brain to shut the fuck up. And just be like, you know what? I'm not going to use the mechanism that I was designed to have of what's everything that can go wrong. Listen, our brains are dirty. Okay? Our brains enjoy reality TV, enjoys drama, enjoys the car wreck on the side of the road more than the sunset. Our brain is freaking dirty. If your hands are dirty, what do you do? So guess what I do? I wash my brain. What's that called? Brainwashing. I brainwash myself in a delusional way to make sure that my brain is thinking about all the good things that can happen instead of all the bad, dirty things that can happen. My brain is clean. It is thinking positively. It is thinking delusionally. And it is a gift for us to learn how to brainwash ourselves for our dreams.
Indeed is a success story partner. Now, if you're hiring, Indeed is all you need. Let me give you an example. If I needed to hire a new editor for this show, I'd go to Indeed and be super specific. Not just, can you edit audio? I'd say I need someone who's edited a conversational podcast for at least 3 years, gets our style, and knows our software. Someone who's done this before. And here's the thing with Indeed sponsored jobs. I'd get people who fit that description. I'm not digging through resumes from people who've edited one YouTube video. I'm getting actual podcast editors who know what they're doing. People who've worked on shows like ours and can prove it. That's what makes a difference. You get people who actually are what you're looking for. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 90% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. And people are finding quality hires right now. In the minute that I've been speaking to you, companies like yours have made 27 hires on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all the boxes, less stress, less time, and more results now with Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help you get your job the premium status it deserves at indeed.com/Clary. Just go to indeed.com/Clary right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Clary. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, do it the right way with Indeed.
HubSpot is a success story partner. Now, if you're looking for a new podcast, one of my favorite shows right now is Demand Decoded. If you're in the B2B marketing space, you need to be listening to this. It's hosted by the team at Blend. They are a demand gen agency. They know what they're doing. They're also part of the HubSpot podcast network. What I love about it is they skip all the theory and they just tell you what's actually working today. So demand gen, marketing, content, LinkedIn ads, attribution. They talk about real strategies that they are using that you can use today that are working. So if you're an entrepreneur, if you're building a business, if you're really selling anything to anyone, go search Demand Decoded wherever you get your podcasts. When you have your subconscious that has been trained from childhood to believe one thing or another, when you have all these people that are very close to you, not just peers and coworkers, like mother, father, sister, brother, and they're all saying one thing. Where do you start to reprogram?
You got to brainwash. That's where you start. You start by content. If you go listen to your podcast or Oprah's Super Soul Sunday and you hear like a story of like Steve Harvey sleeping in his car for 3 years and then the Apollo call, but he doesn't have enough money. And then magically his phone rang with some gig to have him tell jokes for $150. It just came in out of the blue. The universe conspired for him in the darkest time. Universe conspired. He was able to take that $150, able to go to the Apollo, and now we got Steve Harvey. If you listen to enough stories like that, you will have proof that a blessing is coming. I always believe in dark times, Santa Claus delivers presents in the dark. Not when it's bright out. So when something bad happens to me, I start looking around for Santa Claus. I know there's a present here, and it's going to be a blessing. So if my brain has been wired to think so negatively, I'm just going to go listen to enough success stories. And I'll notice they all have the same thing in common. And I will start seeing myself and that, no, I'm not where I need to be. You know what? I'm just like these people. Actually, every successful person deals with actually maybe even more shit than me. Maybe shit, I need more shit because they all have the same thing in common. They dealt with so much shit.
A lot of shit.
So it's like, I'm just like them. And now they have billions. I'm just like them. It's happened over and over. It's not rare. I drive down the street. I live in Malibu, California. I feel so lucky. I used to live in my mom's basement. I can drive down the street in Malibu, and I see every house from Malibu all the way to West Hollywood. And pretty much every house is worth over $2 million. And this is a lot of houses. I'm talking about Beverly Hills. Like, every house. I'm like, it can't be that hard to get rich. Look at all these people. This is just one city. If we go to Vancouver, and then we go to Chicago, then we go to New York. You're telling me every apartment here is like $1 million, $2 million? The small ones? It must be easy. It has to be. It's not some rare occurrence for somebody to become a millionaire. I'm driving down the street, and I'm looking at, just in my vision, 5,000 people that are millionaires. It must be easy. They did it. Okay, it's going to be easy for me too. So when you start training your brain like this, you start listening to content, you start brainwashing yourself to get out of the hard into the easy. You start believing that everything you see in your eyes are actually yours. Your actions are going to be a little bit different. And when you start feeling like a winner, when you practice winning streak and you feel like a winner, how you show up to chase something, you show up with confidence. Remember when you were a single man? Let's go back to when you were a single man. It's scary going up and talking to it.
Of course.
It's scary. Rejection. We know. We've all been there a million times. But if you got a phone number, you feel like a winner. How easy is it to talk to the next girl?
Very.
You're just, it's a thousand times easier.
And if you do it more than once, you realize that most single, beautiful girls, if you're a decent looking, successful, like, fun, charismatic, good guy, they would love if you walked up to them and said hi.
Absolutely. So once you feel like a winner, your actions completely change from there and on out. So the question is, how do you feel like a winner every day? Starts with a cup of coffee. Then the red light. Because once you feel like a winner, everything after that moment changes.
It's so interesting. I posted something the other day that got a lot of hate. I got a lot of hate, and it was so interesting how this one idea, I posted a little quote on Facebook, and the quote, I'm not going to remember it verbatim, but it was along the lines of, if you're frustrated with where you're at in life, the answer is to seek out more difficult problems to solve, along the lines of that. And like, people were upset that they had to be responsible for their own happiness, basically. That if they weren't where they are or where they wanted to be in life, that they should seek even more difficult situations to put themselves into, and that a happy, successful, fulfilling life would be on the other side of those difficult situations, because they felt like, well, why is it my responsibility? Do you ever have people that just don't believe in agency, in accountability for their own life? Then you have to shift that perspective completely, because everything that you're talking about stems from the idea of, I can impact my own life. I can affect my own outcome. But I think that before people even start thinking like that, there's enough people that live in this victim mode, that everything that happens to me is bad and I have no impact over my happiness, my success, my health, my relationship. It's just, the world just keeps throwing me curveballs and there's nothing I can do about it. How do you talk to that person?
If that person was sitting beside me on a bench and we were talking and they were telling me all the bad stuff, I would probably, like, not coach them. I don't think they would need any coaching. I would listen to them. I would probably agree with them that their life is in a pretty bad spot. And then I would gently steer, because they don't need a voice that's different. They need a voice that's familiar. And I would steer to maybe something that was bad that happened in the past, and how did that work out? And I would give them a little bit of confidence that they're still here. And damn, you're really strong for making it through all this shit. Like, you're going through so much shit, and like, you're still here. And it's like, okay. Then I would ask them, like, what do you feel like you deserve? Like, then I get them dreaming a little bit and go into the future, because the present sucks. And once we go to the future a little bit and they start dreaming, their tone's going to change a little bit. And they're going to start thinking about hope, because it's fun talking about the future and what they deserve. And it's like, no, I deserve like money, and I deserve like these people to like stop giving me a hard time. I deserve actually not to have that boss. And then I'm like, what's the business, or what are you going to do? And then I'm going to be like, what if that's easy? And then I tell them a story about how, like, my artist, like, we had to put out 62 songs for our first top 10 record. And then my second artist, we put out about 62 songs. And every time we got to about 62 songs, like, we had a top 10 record in the country. And I'm like, 62, that's pretty easy. Like, let's get to 62.
Now you know the number.
That's a number. It's like, once I put out 62, it's like, I can get to 62. I can count that. Thousands sound difficult, but 62 sounds easy. And I'm like, what if you started this thing? What if it was easy? Like I said, I drove to every radio station and I passed out CDs every night. Like, that's not hard. Like, I just had to like do it. But it was like easy for me to get my dream. And once I get them into that dreaming mode, and then once I get them like feeling like it might be easy, and then once we kind of quantify like the path for that thing that they want. Like, I want to open up a coffee shop. I was like, okay, I have an idea for you. Instead of you sitting in your coffee shop every day begging for a customer to come in, what if you like search the most viral videos of the most creative drinks on TikTok, and you just remade those? And like, you didn't have them on the menu all the time, but like, you just made them, and like, it might be on the menu for a day, so it's like not all the time, but like, you just have this like videos going viral, and everybody's like knows your coffee shop as this like trendy coffee shop. And then you make like 30 of these drinks, and you take it to the, you know, 20 businesses to the right, 10 businesses to the left, and you're just like working this like 3-mile radius. Okay, there's a 3-mile radius of every business or every apartment complex here. 3-mile radius. And you spend the first hour of your day just making sure these people know you exist. 3 miles. That's it. Everybody just needs to know you exist. That's not that hard. We can do 3 miles. We're going to make a list of every business, every apartment, and we're going to go have somebody pass out a flyer or hand out little samples, things like that. And it's like, next thing you know, your coffee shop is packed. All because you didn't sit in the coffee shop begging for a customer to come in. You made some viral drinks. You're showing up on everybody's algorithm. And then you went and passed out flyers or samples. It's not hard. What if it's that easy? Was that hard? Now,
by the way, I was going to say, I love how we believe in the same outcome, but you're so much more positive about the way to get there. See, like when I say like everything you want is on the other side of hard things, that pisses people off. That turns people off.
But it's true though. It is hard. It's just, am I going to tell myself it's hard?
I understand it.
Because reality is, like, I wanted to do an Ironman, right? Is an Ironman hard? 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, then a full marathon. Is that hard?
I'd say so, yeah. I'd say it's very hard.
I got a coach. Coach gave me a training manual and a schedule type thing, and it was so freaking complicated. And I looked at it. And it was like, swim this many laps at this heart rate, and then bike at this heart rate, and then do this at this heart rate, and then do this at this heart rate. And I'm like, what the fuck? This looks insanely hard. And I said, I need to simplify this. I zoomed all the way out, and I looked at the bottom of the page and I said, how many hours a week is this training? And it came out to about 14 hours a week of Ironman training to do an Ironman. This for the whole thing. I was like, 14 hours a week? Well, when I was 8, riding my bike for 2 hours a day on the weekend, we'd ride our bike all afternoon. Okay, so as an 8-year-old, I was Ironman training. And then running for 2 hours in a day, well, like running around playing football, basketball with my friends, we would do that for like 5 hours. Like, okay, so 8-year-old could train for an Ironman because running for a couple hours is not that hard. And then swimming, going to the pool for a couple hours. Okay, so we're talking about when I was 8, I used to Ironman train. 2 hours a day is not hard. That's 14 hours a week. So when I did my Ironman, I trained like an 8-year-old. I'm like, I'm going to go like run around the park for 2 hours. I did it when I was 8. Why can't I do it now? When we were kids, we played. Then we got older and we started working. And then we worked out. Would you say work is easy or hard?
Work?
Work.
It's hard.
Hard. Yeah. Working out even sounds hard.
It sounds not
but
fun.
But like play, it sounds easy, right? So it's like as we get older, like we started working and then working out. But as a kid, we played. We had imagination. We did not have a measuring stick of reality. So we just wanted to seek happiness. We wanted to have fun.
And that's the perspective shift.
I keep going
shift.
Back to it.
Just have fun. But that's the perspective shift.
The reality is,
we lost all that though.
We did. But it's still in us because we are kids still. We just, you know, we grew up. But we can still be kids. The reality is, doing an Ironman is hard. I just told myself it was going to be easy. And that's what made me actually show up.
I want to ask you one last question that I ask everybody. But before I ask that, just tell people, like, where can they connect with you? I know you will eventually have a book out, but I think that's like a TBD or a TBA. What's the social website, YouTube, everything?
My Instagram. That's my favorite place to hang out. It's at Charlie on Instagram.
What are you excited about, dude? What are you excited about in the future? I mean, like, you know, you mentioned at the beginning, you want to live like Forrest Gump, where when you're tired of one thing, you just go on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
So what's the next thing for you?
The next thing for me is I really want to experience true financial freedom. I haven't built a business in 8 years since I left the music industry. I started a nonprofit. Technically, it's a business, but I don't make money from it. I've helped a lot of kids with cancer, but now that the nonprofit is going, I'm like, I'm going to start some businesses. I'm excited. And the first business is actually going to be my book. And to me, that's a business. It's going to be a 3-year, at least 3-year business. And I'm super excited about that. But when I was in the music industry, my best-selling album was 1.1 million. And we had probably sold over, I don't know, maybe like 30 million albums in total. And I want to beat that. I want to beat that with my book. I want to beat my high score. Business to me is like a sport. So I want to sell like over the next like 10 years. I would love to sell like 30 million books. I want to write a classic. I'm even designing my book to be a classic.
If you could only pass on one lesson, like the most important lesson that's changed your life, and you have to give that lesson over to the 20-year-old Charlie Rocket. What is that lesson and why?
Start your winning streak today, right fucking now. Try to get to 20. Watch what happens. Watch how you change in just a day. And then see if you can get to 100 in a day. And then get so addicted to looking at the wins. And notice how your shoulders go back. And notice how magnetic you get. And notice how the text messages that come in are blessings. And the emails are blessings. And everything in your life starts. Everything changes. Get on a winning streak. You want to be a winner? Absolutely. Do you want to be a loser? No. Stop looking at the losses. The losses are there. The wins are there also. Count the wins, watch what fucking happens, and then you'll be on this podcast in a year or so telling a crazy story.